So hello everybody, I'm Dan Kraft from Forum Europe and welcome to Across the Spectrum,
a new podcast which we're recording just a few days after the end of the 15th annual European Spectrum Management Conference, which took place last week and this week. Our aim with this podcast is not to provide a direct summary of the discussions that took place at the event. There was actually a conclusion session which we had on the final day, which we did just that. And incidentally, for anyone interested, this along with the recordings for all the conference sessions and panels are available to download now via the event website, www.spectrummanagement.eu. So we didn't want to do that and go over ground that we'd already covered with the podcast now. Instead, what we wanted to do was to have the chance to expand and pick up on some of the more prominent issues that were raised at the event in a bit more detail. And now that we've all had a couple of days to reflect, maybe even to look at them from a slightly different angle. So to lead the discussion and introduce the fantastic lineup of people that we have with us to discuss these issues, I'd now like to say a warm welcome to Amit Nagpal from Ether Consulting and Richard Marsden from Neera Consulting, who are going to be leading the discussion. So Amit, Richard, over to you, and I'm very much looking forward to it.
Great. Thanks very much, Dan. So as Dan mentioned, it's Amit Nagpal here. I'm a partner at Ether Consulting, the specialist telecoms consultancy. And I'm going to be co-chairing this Spectrum Wars podcast along with my colleague, Richard.
Yeah, and I'm Richard Marsden. I'm a managing director at Neera Economic Consulting. Today, we're going to be exploring whether we are heading towards a new period of conflict over access to spectrum, the scarce natural resource that is the lifeblood of the wireless telecommunications industry.
So Richard and I are today joined by five of the speakers from the European Spectrum Management Conference, which finished a few days ago. Let's just so that all of you on the podcast get used to our voices, each of the speakers will introduce themselves.
Hello everybody, my name is Alexander Kuhn. I'm from the German Regulatory Authority, and I'm happy to speak here in this podcast.
Hi, I'm Nick Blades from Telefonica, where I'm a regulatory policy director.
Hi, I'm Amy Melman, government affairs and policy director at Viasat.
Hello, I'm Brian Sanchev from the European Commission. I work for the Spectrum Policy Unit, and I'm head of sector regarding spectrum for wireless broadband.
Hello, I'm Joanne LeMay, a co-president of LYA, and we're a consulting firm, very active in spectrum and auctions in Europe, in the US, and in Canada, and in spectrum policy. So ready to get going.
Thanks, everybody. Okay, well, since the mobile industry first emerged over 30 years ago, there have been two dominant approaches to allocating spectrum, licensed use and unlicensed use. Now, under the license regime, priority is given to a single user. And under the unlicensed approach, no one gets priority. Now, mobile has been a major beneficiary of both approaches. The industry has secured exclusive access to ever larger swathes of spectrum, with C-band and millimeter wave spectrum being the latest frontiers. At the same time, mobile users offload huge volumes of mobile data onto unlicensed Wi-Fi networks. But change may be coming. New technologies can support shared use of spectrum based on a hierarchy of priorities across users. Meanwhile, new commercial demands for spectrum are emerging, including new providers of wireless broadband services and industry users, verticals, who want to run their own networks. So this begs the question, are we heading towards a new period of conflict over access to spectrum rights? Alexander, these are the kind of long-term issues that BNetzA has to grapple with when making decisions on spectrum allocation. We're very interested in your views on the future of sharing versus exclusive access models.
Thank you very much, Richard. Yes, sharing has always been one of the main pillars of the regulators to move forward and to balance the interests of all the spectrum users. And you're definitely right with your analysis that we are ahead of the time where we have newcomers in the terms of the spectrum users. So therefore, I'm very interested and keen to see how we can prioritize the future in the spectrum, and in particular in the spectrum assignment. You heard about the German decisions regarding the verticals, where we set aside some spectrum, but also where we try to find different ways of sharing. And we've heard that in other countries we see maybe for CBRS, also automatic systems are coming up. So I'm very happy to see these evolving, but we have to So you have also the possibility of best practices and balance the different needs and interests. For in particular for the newcomers, I think for the industries, we need to have some their safe harbor, I would say, for their core spectrum in order to fulfill their needs, but not on the price of the leaving the mobile industry outside and their development of future for the 5G technology. Last comment from my side on this issue, I think we've seen in the past a lot of innovation and also competition on technology sides. 5G now opens up the competition definitely on one technology, which then encompasses more sharing opportunities. And this is a very interesting aspect where I see one of the major pillars for regulatory decisions of the next decade. Thank you.
Thank you, Alexander. And one follow-up question. You mentioned, obviously, the reservation of spectrum for verticals in Germany. I understand that's been quite a controversial policy and that's drawn challenges from the mobile community. It's obviously early days, but how do you see that initiative going?
Up to now, it's quite good. You heard that those who are interested in having exclusive rights for the spectrum of the verticals are not happy with the decision at all. On the other side, those who are very interested in that one, and that's the industries, who would like to have their own networks, they are very keen and very happy with this decision. So we see a quite balanced situation. Those who have been participating in the auctions before and are used to the, I would say, old system are not happy, and the newcomers are happy. So from our understanding, it's a quite balanced situation. And of course, we have made more spectrum available. It's not only the part of the C-band there, and every single operator has get something in the C-band for in Europe and in particular in Germany. So therefore, I don't see that we have to see now the implementation and then see how the thing is moving forward. And we will have a close look if this set aside, if you call it that way, is being successful over the next years, and then maybe reshuffle a little bit if it's necessary.
What I always wonder about is, I mean, given how advanced our sharing technologies are getting now, surely there's a way to make both work in the same frequency, in that you can imagine, for example, that you have the exclusive use spectrum and you may have certain factory sites where it's not being used at all because they're, you know, outside the city centres and the likes, and maybe areas where 3.5 won't get deployed. And then on the other hand, we have the set aside spectrum, which might only be used in a few factory sites, but it could be used in the city centres as well. Now, okay, there will be some instances where the two overlap. Of course there will be, when places where you want to use both. But to completely exclude the other use, in this modern day where we're getting more advanced sharing techniques, I cannot believe that we can't find a technological solution to, in those cases where there isn't a conflict, both users could use the same spectrum, and then we'd have to find some solution for where there is a conflict, I guess.
On both sides, you see, and that would be the economical question on that one, would be interesting to hear other views on it. But on both sides, you see that we've also arranged that you can have negotiations between all the partners in there. Okay. So there is an opportunity for everybody to get some spectrum if you would like to get into the new business of spectrum management, because that is what it's meant for the industry. They are new in the business of spectrum management and dealing with their own ones. And on the other side, you have the MNOs who have to provide a lot of obligations already to the general public and then have maybe completely new business cases to serve with regards to Industry 4.0. So there are opportunities on both sides, and how to bring them together, that should be also a question of the market and not only of the regulator, who picks then the winners and users. In terms of spectrum efficiency, I agree with you, Ahmed. It could be the case that we have inefficiencies on both sides, or we have been a very efficient usage of the spectrum, and I hope for the latter.
Thank you. So, Amy, Amit brought up the topic of more dynamic sharing of technology, of spectrum using new technology. Now, that's an area that your company, Viasat, has been quite interested in. Do you foresee that technology ushering in an era of greater conflict or cooperation in spectrum use?
Well, it depends. First of all, I appreciate what Alexander had to say. I mean, I think having some sort of safe harbor or home spectrum, as I like to call it, for technologies is crucial. I mean, that is our lifeblood. That's exactly where, certainly from a satellite perspective, and I know from a mobile perspective as well, you need to be able to have that home primary spectrum to innovate and use, we use every little bit that we can get. From a sharing perspective, we've looked to, you know, we have brilliant engineers looking to create situations where we can optimize different bands that we might be able to get additional access to supplement what we have from our home spectrum perspective. So certainly we're looking at these things. I think it's something that we're going to be doing a lot more of in the future, and the conflict is going to continue if we don't sort of accept this and move forward in a way that everybody has to actually come to the table and do that sharing. That's the conflict. If you don't have buy-in, you can't actually accomplish that sharing that we're going to need to see in the future.
And let's bring Nick Blades into this discussion. Nick, you're you represent a mobile operator, Telefonica. You've obviously been one of the world's, you know, one of many companies who've been invested very heavily in exclusive use spectrum rights over the last 20 to 30 years. You know, it seems like more sharing is coming. Is that a threat to your industry or an opportunity?
I think actually it's probably, you'd be surprised to hear something we're already used to. In Germany, you know, in the 26 gigahertz band, we're an incumbent in fixed links, potentially an incomer for mobile use. So we sort of have a interest in both sides of the argument there. In the UK, we're a shared user with the military in 2.3. And we also have a new regime where underused or unused mobile spectrum can be requested by people in rural areas. So it's starting to become something we have to consider, both in how we run our business and also how we value spectrum.
Okay, and you were one of the companies that I think objected to BNetzA's reservation of spectrum for verticals. What was your company's problem with that approach?
Well, as we discussed, there's all these competing calls on a limited amount of spectrum and a very large reservation for what could potentially be a fairly small geographic deployment that just creates artificial scarcity for other users. And I suppose that does beg the question, which has been asked, is could you achieve a more optimal outcome? Now, it may be that at a second or third review of how much deployment there has been on either side of that divide, there is a reshuffling that would be really helpful if that reduced the any inefficiency, but also you know, in other bands, it may be the dynamic spectrum access is a solution that allows that efficiency to happen in real time.
Well, let's stay on that theme of dynamic access. Now, I know we've got in the United States, we've got the CBRS auction coming up, which will be a landmark event in terms of making available spectrum that will be shared. And there's a built-in priority system with SAS systems to manage shared access. Joanne LeMay, I believe you are following this in North America and looking at this auction, and you do think it's going to be an interesting event.
Yes, I do think it's an interesting event because just to echo some of the earlier comments of Alexander and Nick and all that, we're looking at the U.S. auction. It's 348 applicants for now. I'm not sure they will all be there in the end, but that includes the mobile carriers and it includes municipalities, utilities. You know, a lot of people are really interested in this spectrum. And it is a three-level kind of spectrum. You have the military, they're called priority access licenses. So you have the military, which has priority, and mostly on coastal areas because it's for naval radar, and you have the others. And you have the ones that buy the PAL. And there's also a portion of the band, which is general access. So basically, you don't pay for that. So it's going to be interesting to see the value that carriers and other players put on the priority access spectrum. You have to consider that if you're in a coastal area and suddenly the military uses it, they could blast the entire band or all your priority access license for maybe 4, 5, 6 hours at a time. That's quite a lot for a mobile carrier that's using that spectrum, or to get your bandwidth reduced by half or things of that nature. So we'll see how the auction works out. And after that, I think we'll see how the implementation, real life implementation works out. And I think that's a big test actually that's coming on this. And I think it will be interesting for the future. And I'm not saying that's the only way to do sharing by any chance. I think there's definitely other ways to do sharing that other than the system that is being implemented in US right now.
Right. And going back to Amy, I mean, do you see CBRS as a model for other bands in the United States and elsewhere and Europe and elsewhere, or do you think there are other mechanisms of sharing that are going to be more effective?
Well, so we've tried a variety of things, whether it's, you know, sort of an anonymous database, certainly different technological solutions, setting up a regulatory regime to do this. This will be very it is going to be a very interesting test. I'm not sure how this is all going to pan out. I'd like to see it work. I'd like to see there be some sort of forced regulatory sharing in some ways, because we've not had success getting people to the table, especially incumbents, who just don't want to share. I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, it's hard to get somebody who's been there for a long time to accept some sort of, other additional use, because that makes for additional expense potentially for them to, protect themselves. So I think it'll be an interesting experiment, and we shall see. We'll see how long it takes to implement, and frankly, how much of a economic incentive it'll be. So we'll see.
Well, one of the things that worries me is that, when we look at a lot of these exciting things that are happening in North America, CBRS and the likes, a lot of these innovations. And at the same time, we sit in Europe and we moan about how all the technology is taking place in Silicon Valley, Facebook, Google, all in North America. Is there a risk that, we're being a little bit less innovative in Europe in our approaches to sharing? And what's going to happen is North America will come up with these innovative approaches, and it'll be North American companies that therefore benefit when this sort of finally comes over to Europe. Do we need to be a little bit more brave in Europe and try and promote some more of this advanced thinking? I don't know if Branimir or Alexander is sort of on the regulatory side, you'd like to comment on this.
Branimir, please.
I definitely think that in Europe, we still to create a sort of a regulatory mindset in support of shared spectrum use. This is not as developed as in the US, where also experimentation is taking place very intensely, and also regulator is probably bolder than a number of European regulators. I think in Europe, however, it would be advantageous if regulators also coordinate a bit between themselves, if they develop best practice and try to identify common cases where also cross-border trials and cross-border solutions may emerge.
And Alexander, that sounds like a plea for you to get engaged in this topic.
Definitely. I said already, I'm very interested to see that. However, if you see that here you have military spectrum, which would block the whole US if you provide only exclusive rights, then you see that there may be some inefficiencies already there. And then opening up then with a different perspective, where you still have the military use on top, and then below that different licenses which operates in other geographical areas and where there is no military use, that is something very interesting, and we will have to look into that one as well. If this have to go via an auction, it's a different perspective. What we have in states in case of Europe as well is something in place. There we have already the predominant general authorization regime in place, which is not been in the US. So what we do is we coming always from the general public can use the spectrum every time, everywhere, but everybody who's a spectrum user asks for exclusivity, protection against other services, and of course long-term stability of the licenses, which is not guaranteed by general authorization. And if we combine that with an automatic system, then we are really moving forward in that direction, and that's something where we have the challenge. So we have to combine the best out of that one, and I'm taking Branimir's plea seriously. Best practice between the European regulators is something very important, and we are very careful working in that direction as well. Thank you.
Great. Well, thanks, everybody. Very interesting topic. It's clear that there's more sharing to come, and we're going to be discussing this at length in the future. But it's also clear that although sharing is about cooperation, there potentially will be winners and losers. So I think this is going to be an area of conflict and controversy going forward. Thank you. Amit.
Okay. So on the second part of this podcast now, we're going to be talking about some of the battleground issues that the Spectrum Wars sort of take place over, and specifically thinking of some of these battles that take place in the World Radio Communications Conferences that take place. I think it's fair to say that sort of WRC 19 focused very much on the millimeter wave bands, and WRC 23, it looks like there's going to be potentially some battles over the mid and low frequency bands. So we thought we'd talk about each of these topics, essentially starting with millimeter wave. Now, in respect to millimeter wave, at the conference, we had a presentation from Verizon, and they talked about how they're using their millimeter wave spectrum already. And they also, the speaker also talked about, you know, some of the very advanced applications, the virtual reality, artificial reality type applications that need those super high bandwidths and low latencies that only millimeter wave spectrum can provide. What I was wondering, though, was that, I mean, those are very futuristic applications. In Europe, we have one great big benefit over Verizon in that we have 3.5 gigahertz spectrum ready to use now. In fact, it is being used in several countries already. So the question I really had was, you know, okay, yes, there is a role for millimeter wave one day, but how aggressive do we need to be about pushing that now? I mean, I know from talking to several national regulators, you know, their European regulations are suggesting that this spectrum needs to be assigned this year, but operators at the same time are coming to them and saying, well, you know, we can't see an immediate short-term use for this. You know, we're happy for you to just hang on to this for the moment. So maybe if I could put that to you, Branimir. I mean, I don't know if you have any thoughts on this from you know, the European perspective. You know, how strictly are you going to be enforcing this regulation?
Thank you, Amit. Yes, indeed. To echo what you said, the future starts today. So we need to be active to make use of these frequencies also in Europe for achieving our gigabit connectivity objectives. I think in the US, this spectrum frontiers approach of the US regulator has borne fruit. There is plenty of spectrum now, which is available in the US in several frequency bands, including parts of the European or global 26 gigahertz band. And I also noted from the presentation of Verizon at the Spectrum Conference in Brussels, there are four pillars for the ultra wideband connectivity, which was stated to be millimeter waves, fiber, virtualized networks, and small cells. I think from the regulatory perspective in Europe, we are supporting all these. We just adopted, for example, the small cell implementing regulation in Europe. And in terms of harmonization of millimeter wave spectrum and also in promoting investment with the electronic communications code, we are pretty well equipped on the regulatory side. So what I want to say is that there has been a strong regulatory push in Europe, and we are missing a bit the market pool. So in terms of deploying services, innovating. So for me, the millimeter wave bands are not necessarily a battlefield for access for the moment. They are rather a fruitful ground for innovation, both in terms of deploying services and also in terms of authorization models. And I would not plead for rush in enforcing, but rather for keeping and reinforcing the momentum around commercial deployment in Europe, according to, let's say, its normal market pace. And definitely, regulators have here to play a role in determining authorization models, which allow access of different users, not only mobile operators, and also ensure efficient use of the spectrum through more advanced sharing arrangements. This will be my initial view. Thank you.
Thank you. And Amy, I mean, you know, the satellite industry must approach, you know, these WRCs with a feeling of, oh gosh, here come the mobile industry again, and trying to grab spectrum off us. I'd be interested in your thoughts. How did you, what do you think about the outcome of WRC-19 and looking forward to future WRCs? Any thoughts from the satellite industry?
Well, you said it best. First, yes, that is sort of the way we feel. But I do think, first of all, that I was pleased that there was additional agreement on use of eSIMs, for example, in the 28 gigahertz band. The IMT wasn't contemplated for that again, so that's good. I mean, I think that certainly there should be innovation for sure. If it's millimeter wave, I'm fine with that. I think there was 14 and a half gigahertz of spectrum that in the millimeter wave bands that was allocated for this use. That's a lot of spectrum. That's an enormous amount of spectrum. I guess my concern is just that we get put into a situation where we are picking winners and losers taking allocations from uses that are reaching a large amount of people in a large geographic area rather than, in a very small part of the US. We haven't seen a lot of uptick, frankly. I mean, I appreciate what Verizon's trying to do, but I haven't quite seen the market there, but hopefully there will be at some point. But I would encourage the use of the harmonized bands from what we saw at WARC to be used for that purpose rather than going outside of that, so that you could get the economies of scale in those bands rather than, for example, a 28 gigahertz band, which we are trying to use heavily ourselves and believe that we are very much a part of the 5G ecosystem and we're all going to have to work together. So, I agree innovation should be there in many of those bands, but I would caution that we may be inadvertently creating a divide that we don't want to create.
Okay. Well, let's move down the frequency range then. Let's start talking about some of the mid bands and look forward to WRC-23. I think one of the hot topics at the conference, one of the most heated discussions, was in relation to the 6 gigahertz band, and in particular, how much of the spectrum in the band should be awarded on an unlicensed basis, and the mobile industry making a campaign for it to be made available for IMT. And sort of one of the thoughts I have is, there are a whole range of options that WRC is looking at for mobile. Is the mobile industry starting to get a little bit too greedy in asking for too much, too many of these bands? I mean, maybe Joanne, I can pass this one over to you. I mean, you chaired this very heated discussion during the conference.
Yes, thank you.
What did you take away? Yeah.
Well, certainly I took away that the situation is settled in some countries, the US and South Korea, as we saw also mm-hmm. last week, where a full 1.2 gigahertz was awarded to, was allocated as unlicensed, in spite of some, representations by carriers such as Verizon, where they wanted a little bit, they would have liked to have a portion of that band as exclusive spectrum for IMT. Now, in Europe, well, there's 500 megahertz is what is being planned right now. I think there's a, the question is out there, should 700 megahertz be allocated to IMT? I think it's a very interesting question. Of course, if it's unlicensed, doesn't mean that the mobile carriers can't use it, but they can't certainly anchor a service in this. It's always like supplemental kind of spectrum, at least up to now. So I think when you look at the US decision, it was unanimous. So they really thought that this was the way to go, to have it unlicensed and have more opportunity for innovators. I'm not sure Europe would go that way. There's maybe also, it's not to, put down millimeter wave, but I think the experience in the US, we've seen how difficult actually it has been to deploy a millimeter wave, or at least the result where, you know, you have 500 megabit on this street corner and you walk 50 feet and you have nothing, or you go back to 4G. So I think that there's maybe an increasing pressure to make a more mid-band available. But then again, 6 gigahertz, you're not going to do much coverage in suburban and rural areas with 6 gigahertz, at least not initially. So I'm not sure that it solves the issue. It's again focused on urban core and urban core. And I think in a sense, you know, it would be interesting for the mobile carriers to have that. But is that really going to solve a 5G deployment issue? I'm not sure that it would, actually, because it's quite limited in distance as well. So not as much as millimeter wave, but we're not talking like UHF, which I know we'll talk shortly, but it has its issues in terms of coverage. So we'll see. You might get, split the pie in two kind of thing in Europe. Maybe that should be considered and have some reserve for IMT, but not necessarily 700.
Okay. Well, everything to play for in Europe. I mean, Alexander, what do you think?
Yeah, two points on six gigahertz. The point was from the technical perspective in the upper range, the difficulty to really identify that the IMT community will be able to handle the thing with care. As you know, that this 6 gigahertz band is complementary to C-band 3.4 to 3.8 or 4.2. So it's the complementary band. If we only make half of it available and keep the rest for the satellites, I think we have to ensure the protection of the satellites, in a particular case also in 6 gigahertz. That was essential. And that is one of the essential points there as well. The other point is fixed services in the band. That is one of the lowest bands for really high throughput fixed links in Germany. And we need to protect those fixed links. The main issue from the US on this point was always that they would like to have Wi-Fi connectivity in the outdoor environment and for links between buildings, which is in particular fixed link. For that solution or for that particular point, Europe has already made a huge band available, which provides much more power and no difficulty with regards to the interference scenario. So therefore, we can start with the 500 megahertz and we can move forward. The question then is, do we find a technological neutral way to implement IMT in the band above 6.4 gigahertz? That's the main question here. We found this way for 66 to 71 at WRC 19. And now we are facing with the situation, is this exclusive or not? Everybody is a little bit shaky about it. From my understanding, we should see here in particular how willing the industry is to share. There are opportunities in 66 to 71, and the same situation is on 6.4 to 7.1. And I don't see that an IMT identification is already the stamp for exclusivity. Thank you.
So going back to our first discussion, it sounds like this could be an interesting testbed for some of the more advanced sharing techniques. Interesting. Okay, let's turn to our sort of third frequency range, and we've already hinted a little bit about this. So the UHF band. So on the very final day of the conference, we had a very lively debate on the UHF band, both sort of the presenters and the sort of formal discussions, but also in the chat function that was taking place in the conference. There was a lot of debate. I've seen a lot of aggressive typing going on during that discussion. And one of the things sort of that came to my mind was essentially that, you know, we have in Europe, we have this the Lamy agreement that was made, which basically said that the broadcasting industry would have the confidence to make investments in DTT, knowing that the spectrum would be secure until at least 2030. But in return, the broadcast industry would then also make investments to make sure that the 700 megahertz band was cleared and made available for mobile. And the question I have is really, given that agreement has been made and is in the process of being implemented, is it really fair to open this debate up again? I mean, I can see, for example, that the Middle East is in a very different situation. So I can see why the Middle East is arguing for this discussion to take place, and there's, you know, no Middle Eastern country has signed up to the Lamy agreement, so fair enough. But is it right that we should reopen this topic now in Europe? Perhaps I can ask Nick if you'd give us your thoughts on this.
Yeah, well, I was actually at the table when we were discussing the issue with Pascal Lamy too long ago. And I think it's worth remembering what was agreed. It was that by 2025, there would be a review and that the DTT operators would have certainty until 2030. So I don't think doing the research disrupts the fact that they do have certainty. I think, you know, things change a lot. I had a quick look actually at a report after the conference. And if you look at the data that's attached to the report, I'm sure lots of those usage figures in relation to DTT channels and also in relation to IMT usage would have changed quite significantly. So, you know, I'm a scientist by training. I'd much prefer to do the research and then make a decision and give everybody as much notice as possible without necessarily, you know, going back on the deal in relation to 2030. I think you talk about the investments in DTT. Lots of the TV companies are making very large investments in online platforms now. You know, Comcast's acquisition of Sky in large part is to do with technology. So I think it would be very interesting to look at how that's going to play out and whether, maybe not for the whole of Europe, because in some southern European countries, they're very reliant on DTT. But in some parts of Europe, there might be broadcasters who would rather get their PSB obligations delivered over the internet rather than through a more expensive platform.
Branding, I mean, obviously it was the commission that sort of kicked off the whole LAMI process. So, you know, would you like to comment on where the commission is currently thinking on this?
Yeah, sure. I'll start first with, let's say, the bigger picture. I think each WRC, except for having, of course, regulatory relevance for cross-border coordination issues at the global level, sends also certain signals when identifying spectrum for certain use. And this happened in the past with the 800 MHz band, the 700 MHz band, and Europe released these bands following certain WRC decisions. I think for the next WRC 23, we as an European Union entering this conference with a clear, stable, and stable regulatory framework. And this is the UHF decision, which was advised by the LAMI report. And this report was really a great success. And I think this major formula 2025-30 was the pillar, was the building block also for the UHF decision, meaning that by 2020, the 700 MHz band had to be released. And this is happening now. By 25, we have the review and broadcasters have the certainty to use sub-700 MHz spectrum by at least 2030. I think, and also Nick pointed to, that, to this, we have now as a focal point the upcoming review, which should be by 2025. And if we look at the text of the UHF decision, this review and the subsequent report from the Commission in cooperation with the Member States should be based on certain social, economic, cultural, and international aspects, elements. It should also take into account the changes in consumer behavior, but also technology. And I think these last two elements are quite prominent. We are experiencing change of consumer behavior. We also see some signs of cooperation between the broadcasting and mobile communities in using 3GPP technology, 5G towards 5G. The audiovisual sector is termed a vertical in terms of 5G. And this, together with the downlink use of the sub-700 MHz band, could provide some viable option for the whole broadcasting terrestrial platform to move ahead and to become more appealing also. But this is still open to me. I think the WRC 23 will inevitably impose a sort of review of the situation. And this will take place in the next 2 years. For me, this is a bit too early compared to this deadline in the LAMI report around midterm, so around 25. And this will be done inevitably in fora like the task group at ITU level, CPG, also the RSPG has to provide an opinion. And finally, the union should take a common position for the conference by virtue of a council decision. And this will be clearly a political decision, but advised by certain inputs, which also Nick referred to, and I also agree that it should be based on solid evidence of about the developments. And we will have also to take into account the opinions of other regional groups within Region 1, right? So we are not alone. So clearly, there is some difficulty in this. This position to be taken for WRC 23 should, in my view, ensure a balance between two things. One is ensuring this protection of broadcasting use in the spectrum below 700 MHz in the long term until 2030, but also keep the door open in a way for a potential regulatory adaptation beyond 2030. And if we remember, the WRC 23 will be the only conference dealing with this spectrum until 2030. So it will be one which is relevant, but which comes a bit too early. So for me, it will be very important what signal the European position will give to the conference and how the outcome of the conference will influence any regulatory follow-up in Europe in the long term.
Well, let's hope with all these different challenges that we're facing at the WRC that we can find win-win agreements like, you know, the LAMI report seemed to be at the time, at least, anyway.
Yeah, sure.
All right, thank you. Well, we've covered a wide range of topics in the last 45 minutes. I'd like to conclude the podcast by asking each of you to name one key initiative in the form of a short phrase or topic that you feel should be included in the next EU radio spectrum policy program. Amy, let's start with you.
Thank you. I mean, I would simply say that from a satellite perspective, we have tens of billions of dollars of investment, and we'd like to continue to have certainty as far as the spectrum that we are using today, and would continue to like to work with the European countries and figure out how to accelerate that growth in the industry and maintain spectrum to do that.
Thank you. Alexander.
Yeah, two points. I would like to see the RSPP more in a direction than in a directive. Less orders, more policy program. And two issues there, sharing incentives and definitely security of the UHF decision would be helpful for the overall period as Branimir outlined. Thank you.
And Nick?
I suppose there's two things. One would be a clear pathway for shared access in the 2.3 and 3.8 to 4.2 bands. I think if we're really serious about sharing, those are the ones where we might have the most interest. And also, I suppose the other side of sharing is where we've got experience of fragmentation arising from historical decisions to partition bands. Is there ways that we can do sharing to reduce that fragmentation and improve efficiency?
Thank you. And Joanne?
Well, I guess I'll jump on the spectrum sharing bandwagon, but I think that would be important. But I'll bring it in the context of making sure we don't have a 5G divide, if you want, between urban and rural areas. I think the way we're going right now in the industry, 5G will not be heavily deployed anytime soon in rural areas. And if the last 4 months have been any indication, there was reference to changing user needs. So people are user behavior by force in some instances. We're working from home. How long we will do that, I don't know. But I think this issue of having 5G outside of core urban areas and having good spectrum to do that will become more important. And I think, one size doesn't fit all. The spectrum sharing in rural areas and suburban areas, I think that's could be a lot more important than we think or over the next few years.
So, Branimir, we've heard sort of pleas for people to keep hold of their own exclusive spectrum, but also to have greater shared access to others. And from Alexander, we've had a plea for more guidance, but less direction. You've heard people's suggestions. How do they sound to you?
They sound for me very logical, and I tend to support everything I heard. The Radio Spectrum Policy Program is, of course, a relatively wide horizontal instrument. And certainly it is a strategic programmatic document to start with. So I think that it should give definitely the direction. I think also that the new RSPP, as we call it, should take over some of the spirit and some of the principles from the current, from the existing RSPP, because these many of these principles are still valid, including the bridging of the digital divide. And this should, of course, be pursued also with the deployment of 5G. I fully agree with those who mentioned shared spectrum use as a priority. This is my personal priority as well, as for setting the vision for the next RSPP, making namely shared spectrum use a mainstream mode also within Europe. I think that the RSPP as such in its nature looks not only at one domain, which could be wireless broadband, but across different domains, so including satellite and also other uses, also in support of the European Green Deal. So we'll have to assess the demand of all these and put in corresponding provisions in this program. This will be also my concluding remark.
Thank you. So we return full circle to sharing, which seems to be a theme that's going to be very important in the coming years. Well, thank you, Branimir, and thank you everyone for a very interesting discussion. It's clear that we have several years of spectrum battles ahead of us, so future conferences are definitely going to be interesting.
Well, guys, thank you all very much indeed. Thank you to Richard, thank you to Amit, and thank you to all of our participants, to Branimir, Alex, Joanne, Amy, and Nick. So we really managed to cover a lot there in a relatively short time, and it was fascinating to hear all of your different perspectives. I mean, as Richard mentioned, I think these are issues and topics that I'm sure are going to continue to be discussed for a very long time. And speaking as a conference organizer, I'm very happy to see that. I just wanted to end with a quick reminder to everyone of the various events that we now have coming up over the next few months as part of our Global Spectrum series. For rather obvious reasons, all our events this year have now been switched to a virtual online format, but we are still going to be holding the same regional focused events as we normally would be. The next event is going to be the Asia Pacific Conference, which will be taking place from the 3rd to the 6th of August. And then following that, we're also going to be holding before the end of the year the regional events focusing on Sub-Sahara, the US, Latin America, and also the CIS region. So details of all of these can be found on the website spectrum-series.com. So once again, thank you so much to all of you guys, all of our speakers and panelists for joining us. Thank you very much for everyone for listening, and look forward to hopefully coming back with another podcast very soon. Thank you and goodbye.